Hi, today's September 9th, 2018. This is Mobius Podcast 267, and I'm Todd Agassawar, my good friend John Westfall. And today, unlike every other podcasting universe, we're not going to speculate on the various and sundry announcements between now and October 9th, but I will mention them. First up, I'm trying to get the date right. Today's the 9th, so September 12th is a Wednesday. That's kind of a weird day, right? Isn't September 12th a Wednesday? Let me check. Yeah, because aren't Apple announcements normally on a Tuesday?
They usually are. Come to think of it, now that, but you know, I guess Apple's just deciding to.
You know why? Tuesday is 9/11. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm guessing. I don't know if that's the reason, but probably not a great date. Although they have had other 9/11 announcement dates. But in any case, so Tuesday, September 12th, Apple, iPhone, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to speculate, but I will say there will probably be at least one thing that I want that won't appear, and that's an iPad Mini Pro with Apple Pencil support and a smart connector. That's not going to happen.
Oh, but if it appeared, you'd be the first one in line.
I am pre-ordering it like that minute. other stuff.
You ordered somehow, even though it's not available, even though it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That's how badly you.
That's right. But we're going to talk about it next week. Well, not it, but whatever is announced. October 2nd is the Microsoft event, some new Surface thing or other. And October 9th is some kind of Google event, most likely some kind of Pixel announcements, maybe some Chromebooks. We don't know. We don't claim to know. Some other people claim to know. Go read their sites. All right, now something I read on the Skype blog, so I assume it's true, it's the official Skype blog, is that they say they're introducing Skype call recording, but looking at least this Mac version, I don't see it. I don't see a way to record on the Mac version of Skype. And they said the only version of Skype that will not have the recording feature, I'm kind of scrolling through stuff, is the Microsoft App Store version. Which I find kind of interesting. But no, I'm looking at tools and blah, blah, blah. And I don't see anything very cool. But at any rate, we shall think about trying it. Do maybe a mini podcast just to get a sound quality thing that's available.
Yep.
Next item is going to be somewhat sad for people still on Windows 7. And I know people still on Windows 7. And that is starting January 14, 2020. If you want to get security updates, you're going to have to start paying for it. So we'll see. I don't know
that
how much it is, though.
Seems like, I don't know, Windows 7 doesn't seem like it came out that long ago, and I think that's because that was the last version that I think Windows purists sort of think of as Windows before the great Windows 8 debacle.
Yeah.
You know, in the timeline of acceptable Windows versions, we sort of went 95, 98, then we all hated ME, then some of us got 2000 in a business context, and then some of us played with 2003 in a server context. Mm-hmm. But then it really was XP. I think for a lot of people, XP is still Windows. And then 7 was good enough to replace
7
XP.
7 was good enough.
We don't want to talk about Vista.
No.
And so really, XP and 7, I think, are what people think of as traditional Windows these days. And even though Windows 10 has been around for a while now, and it solved many of the problems that Windows 8 created. I still think a lot of people haven't fully embraced it.
Yeah, and John, I don't know if you remember, but back in the day when we were Microsoft MVPs, do you remember the summit we were at where I can't remember who the head of Windows was at the time? Maybe it was Jim Altshuler or something. But anyway, somebody announced that the Windows XP end of life. And remember the great uproar that came from that crowd?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just end of life. I think it was end of support. Yeah, where they were not going to provide.
They had extended it.
Yeah.
Because they extended it two or three times.
Yeah.
So,
we started that.
XP was a much loved operating system.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't very good in terms of, you know, there were definitely problems that Windows 7 and Vista even fixed. But XP had some security holes in it that you could drive a truck through, but it was at least.
Hey, John, can you move your mic a little? I think your beard is blocking it.
Ah. That can happen.
Yeah. But anywho, Windows XP Service Pack 3 where it became good, right? Like it was less porous to security holes.
Service Pack 2. Service Pack 2 is where the firewall came
in. Oh, okay, good. Good.
I remember.
Yeah. But yeah, up until then, actually, it was kind of like a security risk to run with, as I recall.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Alrighty, so that's happening. If you're Windows 7, you might want to think about moving up and out. Windows 10 isn't bad, you know. I no longer use Windows at home, unless I absolutely have to, and there's very few times I have to. But it's okay when I use it, and I use it every day at work. That's, you know, that's all right. All right, the next thing I wanted to mention is it's in a New York Times article that Anchor Free, the maker of a VPN, a free VPN, I should note, they inject ads basically into the system. They've raised 200. Oh, we forgot one thing. Before we get to that one, we want to back up on our list, and John has a tech find that we wanted to mention.
Yeah, this was just a real quick thing I found this week. As regular listeners will know, all three of them, last year I had to upgrade my Mac Mini setup to a QNAP NAS unit, and the QNAP unit that I bought for my primary NAS is very nice. It's one of the more expensive. It's got plenty of RAM, plenty of processing power. But I bought another one around Christmas time last year to set up as an offsite backup. So that one is kind of a little more underpowered. It's only got a gig of RAM. It's got a dual-core processor. It's not the beefiest of stuff out there. But it gets the job done. Lately, though, I thought, well, gee, it'd be nice to play around with it, maybe add a few capabilities to it, maybe do some things that it wasn't originally designed to do. And I started to run into memory limits quite quickly.
Yeah.
And then I found, as I played around with it, that the latest version of the operating system, QTS, that QNAP NAS has run, the latest major version actually has a program in it called QBoost, which has a hidden functionality to schedule services. So now the service that I have that takes up the two services I have that really take up a lot of RAM, one of them runs at night because it's backup replication. The other runs during the day, so it's accessible when I need it to connect to. But it was just one of those neat little finds where you go, wow, I'm surprised they built that in, and they really did not advertise it at all. So
yeah.
If you have one of those and you struggle with RAM, go take a look. You might be surprised to find a scheduling feature in there.
Yeah, it's amazing what these storage appliances can do these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to ask you to do one more mic check on. Can you check your Skype to see if it's actually using your microphone? I think so. One of the things we started a podcast, I noted to John that. So I'm using a USB mic. John's using a Apple headset plugged into the mini plug jack. But one of the things I noted to John before we started the podcast, and Skype, you know, and its continuous degrading of services, it's getting worse and worse every time they release a new version. The current version of Skype, unlike all previous versions, cannot remember audio settings.
So how do I sound now?
About
any
the same.
Better or any worse?
About
so
the same.
It's using, or at least it's telling me that it's using the the device that I'm normally recording from.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, John has never had to move his mic in hundreds of podcasts. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah, and it's the right, it's not like I have them reversed or anything like that. So.
Yeah, anyway, we'll muddle through this. Anyway, so QNAP scheduling service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, getting back to Anchor Free. So the reason, well... So Anchor Free does a free VPN. They do ad injections, as I recall, which is how they get the free part. And they raised $358 million in funding because NYT says the investment in Anchor Free suggests that the VPN category is becoming more mainstream. Investors previously avoided it partly because, in part because relatively few users have adopted that technology. And that they mean VPN. And, you know, it's funny because I remember just a couple of years ago, I asked John, what VPN do you use? And he pointed me to PIA, Private Internet Access, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is a paid VPN service. And it's pretty good, although lately its servers have been kind of flaky, in my opinion. It's been more difficult to reach certain servers. I noticed a lot of servers appear offline or unavailable. But that aside, you know, it's been pretty good, and I strongly recommend using a VPN in a number of situations, like you're sitting at a public Wi-Fi hotspot in Starbucks, that kind of stuff, airports. But the reason I mention this, I rarely discuss financial stuff, you know, where people raised funds and stuff like that. But I found this interesting because way, way back in Mobile Views Podcast 23, and as a reminder, we are currently at 267, but way back in Mobile Views Podcast 23, in April of 2009, I interviewed the founder and CEO, David Gorjansky, for this podcast, and we talked about the free ad-supported VPN. And the reason I tried to get him, because I was really suspicious about this whole ad injection thing and all of that. I wasn't even know what else is going on. But I read what I wrote for that podcast in the show notes that I published is... this is me talking, way back in 2009. I was very skeptical of the service before speaking with David, but I developed a level of comfort after speaking with him and am running their software and using their service on my Asus 1000HA netbook. Remember netbooks? Mm-hmm. Running Windows 7 beta. That's how long ago that was. Windows 7 was still in beta, apparently. Any rate, so I thought that was interesting since it was somebody I actually talked to. You know, many, many years ago, over nine years ago, actually. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and it's kind of neat to know that the company is surviving and thriving. And if you're looking for kind of a starter kit VPN, it runs on pretty much all the platforms, including, if I recall, iOS, you know, iPhone, iPad. So if you're not quite ready to make the jump to paid VPN service, you can at least play with this. I can't remember if it has paid options, but anyway, it's called Hotspot Shield. The company is named Anchor Free. And
I believe what you're trying to say is New York Times, you heard it here first, Anchor Free.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Mobile Views Podcast 23, 2009. Mm-hmm. I was talking VPNs before VPNs were cool.
Yep.
Okay. And now to the main thing. So... this thing happened yesterday, and I'll back up my story a bit before yesterday. So about 2 weeks ago, I think, I was listening to This Week in Google, and one of the co-hosts, Stacey Higginbotham, I think, mentioned that Kevin Toffel, who I know, you know, a little, never met him in person, but, you know, read his stuff and Facebook friends, that kind of stuff. And I've come to trust his opinion, and she said that, hey, you know, Kevin Toffel bought this relatively new Lenovo smart display. I think it was released in July of this year, so just 2 months ago. Less than 2 months, actually. So the Lenovo smart display, which is a Google Assistant device. I think the first Google Assistant device. And he highly recommends it. So I thought, interesting. And I looked it up real quick because I really, you know, couldn't remember what it did or what it looked like. You know, kind of barely remembered its announcement at CES or something. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting, but maybe more money than I really want to pay. I think the list price was $250 or so for the 10-inch models. There's a 10-inch model and an 8-inch model. So I promptly said, kind of interesting, but not sure I want to spend the money. So yesterday, Saturday, September 8th, I'm at one of the two centers of technology, Sam's Club, the other being Costco. And so I'm at Sam's Club, and I see the 10-inch Lenovo smart display for $230. And, you know, he said, well, that's just a $20 drop. Yeah, true. And you can get it cheaper on Amazon, I think. But it included a free Google Home Mini. Now, I already have one, but I figured, you know, always a sucker for a bundle deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I held the pull card. There's no box. You got to, you know, get a pull card and pay for it, and then they'll get you the actual box. Pull the pull card, and I'm kind of holding it in my hand, and I pop out my phone, and I... so, yeah, I'm going to go find an article that Kevin wrote. So I found the article Kevin wrote, and I read through it as I'm standing there in front of the pull card, or with the pull card in my hand. He goes, I'll put the pull card in my cart, and I'll wander around and buy stuff and figure it out later. So by the time it was time to get to the cash register, I said, yeah, I'll pick it up. I think it's kind of interesting. You know, I'm a fan of smart speakers, and this one has a 10-inch display, which I've always found kind of intriguing. In fact, the Amazon Fire HD 8 I bought on Prime Day for $50 has a mode where you can use it as an Echo-like device. You know, it has Alexa built in and all that kind of good stuff. But the microphone isn't very good on it, and I fussed with it in that mode a bit, and it wasn't appealing. But I thought, you know what? I'll buy this. If I don't like it, I'll return it. So I bring it home and I set it up, and boy, it's kind of interesting. So let me go through some basics and I'll tell you what I think. And if you have any questions, let me know. So it's kind of on a, it's built to stand at a fixed angle. So there's no, there's no adjustable stand like the Surface. You know, it's got a speaker on the left-hand side. It's got a 10-inch, beautiful 10-inch screen on the right-hand side. It can be oriented portrait mode, but the only thing that works is Google Duo, so useless. So basically, it's a landscape device. It's got an octa-core Snapdragon 624, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. And I had to think now, so octa means 8, I would guess. So it's got an 8-core, 1.8 gigahertz processor. It's got a beautiful 1920 by 1200 display, so that's HD, you know, full HD display. Color, saturation, everything's beautiful. It's got two 10-watt speakers with two passive tweeters, and it's got a 2x2 dual microphone array. So it's not, doesn't have quite the microphone, you know, 7 microphones, I think, in the original Amazon Echo, but it's pretty good, and it's much better than the Fire HD in terms of, you know, being able to hear what I say. So here are the rules I have for using this. The main thing, remember, rule number one. The main thing to remember is this. Even though it has a touch display, ignore it as much as possible. the UI is okay. You know, it's nothing great. It's not, and it's probably got Android underneath, but you can't tell. It's basically locked into, you know, like a kiosk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's designed to be used with your voice and with a Google Home app on your, you know, on your smartphone or tablet or whatever. So try to touch it as little as possible, even though it has a passable touch display. If you do it that way, I think you're much happier. Don't treat it like an Android device because it's not going to happen. You can't install apps and all that kind of stuff. It does what it does. Rule number two, if you are invested in a Google environment, this thing is for you. I'm heavily invited. You know, I've got a subscription, a family subscription to Google Play Movies and TV, which includes YouTube Premium. I don't have YouTube TV, but if you did, you could use it to watch TV, you know, live TV, using voice control, which I think is kind of neat. It does not support Amazon Prime, and it doesn't support Netflix. Although if you go to Lenovo's FAQ about the smart display, they're kind of cagey about it. They kind of say, you know, we don't support it now kind of thing. Apparently, they're supposed to support it. Now, one thing it can do, third-party service-wise, is it can stream radio stations that are streaming through iHeartRadio. So in our local station, at least the one I tried, works fine. So you can do that. Okay, that's rule two. Rule three, if there's more than one person in your home, be sure they all register with their Google account, you know, using the Google Home app, and train the smart display for their voice. And this is called voice match. And it works pretty good. My daughter and I did this. And so when she says, show me my calendar, it'll show her calendar, not mine. And vice versa, if I say it, you know, and you don't have to, like, identify yourself, say, you know, this is Todd or anything. You'll know who you are. And you'll show me my calendar. And similarly for, you know, YouTube videos, which you can search and things like that. So let's see. One thing I wanted to mention is, let's see. The YouTube interface, the UI, on the display itself is not very good, in my opinion. The only thing it shows you is some recommended videos, doesn't show you subscription video. On the graphical interface, you can't search. You can search using voice, but quite frankly, it's not very, it doesn't produce good results. I think it produces okay results, but it doesn't produce good results. It's not like, say, you know, using YouTube in a web browser. So what you can do, though, is you can cast from a device. I happen to test it with an iPhone 7 Plus. So YouTube on iOS, and I cast to the device, and it works great. So you have a much bigger picture. The sound is coming through the much nicer speakers. It's a really good experience. I really like that. Same for Google Play Movies and TV, which is their movie and TV playback app. If you have purchased or have free video content on Google, and that works great too. So, but again, no Netflix, no Hulu, no Amazon Prime. The other thing I noticed is that, and this is an observation, Observation number two is that the weather story is always bad at Google for my area. So I don't know what source they're using, but the weather for my particular area in Hawaii, and actually other areas in Hawaii too, is consistently off. The temperature is consistently 5 to 8 degrees lower than it actually is. And, you know, the difference between, say, 78 degrees and 85 degrees is a big one, you know, especially when humidity is high. One is not too bad. It's pretty comfortable. 78 is very comfortable. 85 is uncomfortable, especially when it's humid. And the last observation is that the synthetic voice is not quite as natural as Amazon Echo's. And let me see if I can point my microphone to appropriate things so you can hear it. Okay, so here we go. Let's try this. Okay, Google, what is a podcast?
Here's the definition of podcast: a digital audio file made available on the internet for downloading to a computer or mobile device, typically available as a series.
Okay, Google, installments
stop. Of which can be received.
Now, you know, this is at volume 5, and the microphone is about 8 inches away from the speaker. Okay, now I'm gonna point that the echo is quite a bit further away. The echo is about, I'm gonna say, 7 to 8 feet away. But let's see how this works. Alexa, volume 5. So both of them have a 10-point scale for volume. Alexa, what is a podcast? Alexa, what is a podcast?
Podcast is usually defined as distribute multimedia files over the internet for playback on a mobile device or a personal computer.
Could you hear that okay, John?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one, even though it's farther away, it did sound a little more crisp.
Yeah.
I think it cut through a little bit easier. And I think it's interesting just as you were talking, I was kind of contemplating ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And how, as you mentioned, it's a very useful thing if you're in the Google ecosystem and very invested in it. Mm-hmm. And I get that because a lot of the things I use work very well if you're invested in the iOS ecosystem. Mm-hmm,
sure.
But I'm starting to think that in 2018, it might not be acceptable anymore to lock people into your ecosystem.
Hmm.
This is going way more philosophical.
Yeah, no, go ahead, go ahead.
The Lenovo smart display. But, you know, I like playing with technology. And for a while there, I think, gave it a go of the idea of could you have an ecosystem and everyone do everything within it. But we've got some very clear pieces of evidence that, for example, Google Photos kicks iOS Photos in the behind. It's a much better product. iOS Notes is better than what Google puts together in all of their different note-taking apps. Wait.
Have you tried Google Keep?
I've played with Keep. I haven't played with it in a while. Have they made anything substantial to it?
Well, I don't know if they've added... I mean, I use it fairly regularly, at least a few times a week. Mm-hmm. And although it's not an Evernote replacement by any stretch of the imagination, it is pretty good. I really like it.
Well, notes aside, I'm sure there's something that we could agree. I don't know what it would be that Apple does better than Google.
And vice versa.
And there's probably even something that Microsoft does better than the two of them.
No, that's not true.
But it's interesting. The more I think about this and the more I want to play with different pieces of technology, and maybe, you know, I've been considering getting an Android phone just to have on Google Fi, just as a secondary device just to play with. It's kind of daunting to think, wait a minute, what wouldn't I be able to access that I can access on iOS? So I really like these devices, and I like Lenovo stepping up and doing something that the others have been kind of, you know, that Microsoft, Google, and Apple have kind of kept to themselves, and Amazon. But so it does sound like it could be a cool thing, just like we have multiple Windows vendors, you could have multiple smart device creators. But I think you have to, if you're running on Android, I think you have to run everything that runs on Android. So, you know, Amazon Prime and Netflix, that's great in stock Android. So if this thing's running any kind of Android, let me have that too.
Yeah, so, you know, I use both an iPhone 7 Plus. Yes, I am a couple generations old. And a Google Pixel 2 running in the latest rev of Android. And I'm trying to think. I think for me, and I won't say this is for everybody, you know, certainly the Android doesn't do the... Well, can it do the iCloud thing? I'm not sure. You might be able to log in through the web. But in any case, the only substantive thing not available on my Android device from the iOS world is probably iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no iTunes for Android. But that said, I don't really miss it because I have, I have a family subscription for Google Play Music, which includes, you know, videos and things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can get music-wise, I can get anything on the Android site, actually free, because I don't have to pay per song since I have Google Play subscription, or whatever it's called now. It might be called YouTube Premiere. I'm not sure what it's called anymore. But there's not much I miss, really. I mean, you know, all the third-party apps I need run on it. And, of course, all the Google stuff runs on it great. Doesn't have Overcast for mm-hmm. podcast playing. But there is, you know, Google's own freebie podcast player, which is not nearly as good as Overcast. But it's free. No, and it kind of does the job. So, no complaints. Personally, I still feel like the iPhone experience is a smoother one than Google's Android experience. Just, you know, in terms of swiping things and selecting things and launching apps and, you know, how apps work and how they look. But that said, Android has become a fine operating system. Mm-hmm. And the Pixel is a particularly nice device. You know, it's still... Mine is, 1 year old now. I have the Pixel 2, so it's a year old and doesn't have the sluggishness that other Android devices I've had seem to develop about, you know, at its 1 or 1.5 year mark. I know the Nexus 6 started feeling really sluggish after about 1 year, and I still don't know why. And no, I didn't do a hard reset and rebuild. Yeah, I could, I guess. And now that it's 3 years old, the device is actually 4 years old, but I got it in the middle of its life cycle. Not at my Nexus 6 is 3 years old. It feels even more sluggish, although it's still usable. I kind of use it as an iPod Touch. You know, it doesn't have any cell service. But
in general, I think we're actually getting to the point where devices don't become horribly sluggish if they're premier devices.
Yeah.
Although that doesn't mean that people don't infer they are. So I was reading Facebook updates this week, and someone in my Facebook feed who got an iPhone 10 when they first came out, just like I did. Was talking about, gee, my iPhone 10 is really buggy and slow lately. I guess it's Apple's planned obsolescence and, you know, conspiracy theory and all that. And I thought, no, actually, my iPhone 10 is working wonderfully, and I have no plans to upgrade or change. So I'm starting to think that the sluggishness, if you're on a high-end device, is more in your mind nowadays than in reality. Although, if you're on a lower-end device, I think it's still definitely a reality for you.
Yeah. I have to say, the devices I'm running now, my iPhone 7 Plus is 2 years old. I think I just paid the last of my, you know, interest-free payments for it after 24 months. And I'm kind of waiting to see what's announced on Wednesday. I keep wanting to say Tuesday, but on Wednesday. Since I'm also now out of my 2 year warranty. So, you know, we'll see how that works. I don't know. So what do you think, Johnny? You know, because I avoided buying the Echo Show, which is the other display device. Like I said, the Fire HD8, Apple really doesn't have, Apple has that, whatever you call them.
I think the display devices, the smart assistants with displays are great if you have individuals who are averse to using a tablet or smartphone.
Yeah.
So if you've got older relatives or younger relatives or any people you know that you would like to video chat with and they're the kind of people that want to gather around something and not just sit where they are, then I guess I think that's a great use scenario. Otherwise, I think just audio only is pretty much what I want out of a smart device right now, or a smart assistant, because most of the time I don't want to be looking at them. I want to be just listening, and I can be walking around a room and getting all the information without having to focus on a screen.
Yeah, but that was the wonderful thing about the Echo. Actually, it is the wonderful thing about the Echo. I still have mine. It's still sitting. I moved it a bit away because I wanted to focus on the Lenovo Smart Display for a while, but it's still a wonderful device. Highly recommend it. One thing I wanted to mention that I neglected to mention. So this thing has a front-facing camera because it can do, you know, it can use, like I said, Google Duo to, you know, do video conference or video calls with people. It has a physical shutter that can cover the camera for privacy, which I thought was nice. Now, there is no drop-in feature like there is with Amazon's, show, Echo Show. So it's not like somebody could suddenly pop in and see what you're doing. But it does have a physical shutter that, you slide a switch up or down. And when it is shuttered, when it is in privacy mode, you see a red paint underneath, essentially, in the little hole where the camera normally peeks through. So you know that you're in privacy mode, which is kind of nice, I thought. I thought that was a good design. It's not like, I got a software switch to turn off the camera and it'll never turn on and nobody will ever turn on. You pretty much, you slide a little piece of, a material over the camera. There's no way anybody can see through that.
Yeah, and that's a similar design feature that Dell is putting on their new all-in-one PCs. They have a physical piece of plastic that slides over the camera lens when you put on the privacy switch.
Right, so you don't have to put a piece of blue tape on.
No, unless you want to, unless you like the aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know how many people's notebooks I've seen with the blue tape on the screen. And I'm not mocking them. I understand their rationale for it, and I support them. I'm just too lazy to put a blue tape on my notebook.
I don't do anything that interesting. If someone's spying on me, they're getting a lot of very boring footage.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same here.
And if I had state secrets or corporate secrets or secrets, then I guess I would very much appreciate and understand using those sorts of things, but I typically don't. So I guess I just need to be more interesting.
Yeah. But anyhow, if you possibly add Android to your array of tools after the announcement next month, I'll be interested to learn if you are tempted to get something like, get other devices like the Google Home, or this smart display technology. And I think Lenovo's is the first of several that are coming out. I think other manufacturers are also going to come out with a smart display. And we'll see if, Google announces their own hardware, which I don't know. I don't think they would do that, given their partners are still in queue to release their various devices. But I have to say, so I guess the main question is, am I going to keep it or return it? And I'm going to keep it. I really like it. Also I blame Kevin Toffel for this whole thing. I probably wouldn't have even, considered it had I not heard he really liked his and then read his article standing there trying to make my decision. So, Kevin, I blame you personally for this $230 purchase.
That's great. I'm sure he appreciates your blaming of him.
Yeah. I lay it at his feet. I don't know. There's a whole bunch more to say about it that's kind of interesting. Like, it's always on, of course. It's got no battery. It's plugged in to the wall. And the background scenes are pretty neat. You can choose from your own photos or artwork or photos by other people that, make their photos public. And the other thing I found out yesterday is, it is in a room that has windows. So during the day, there's, light. There's really no way I could show. I could have put a box over to test it, I guess. But at any rate, I tested it last night. And with, at night, with the lights out, it turns off the screen. So it is something you could put in your bedroom if that's where you wanted it. And, the screen, which is always on, will dim itself, with just a very dim clock readout. But other times, it has the background screen going on with photos or whatever you decide to have. And it's quite nice. I kind of enjoy it. So, thumbs up from me for the Lenovo smart display.
And I'm interested to see if your prediction that a Pixel phone would be a gateway drug for me, but I guess we will see.
Well, you know what happened after you switched to the iPhone.
Actually,
no.
No, my first Apple device that was a daily driver was a MacBook.
Ah, interesting.
And I was still on Android up until I moved to Shreveport a few years ago, and my T-Mobile service that I had for 9 years didn't work in my apartment.
Oh.
Worked on the balcony, but not the apartment. And so at the time, T-Mobile was still the only carrier without an iPhone. And I thought, well, if I'm going to switch carriers, I'll try the iPhone. I've never had one as a phone. So that's when I made the switch. So it was not for any sort of, I got to have an iPhone. It was more I didn't even have the option and might as well try it out.
Hmm. And for your information, my Apple gateway drug was the Mac Mini.
Hmm.
First Mac I owned ever. I mean, I used Mac previously, but it's like owned by the school or something. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first. And then after I got that, you know, the iPod had already become very popular, but I think the iPod Nano came out. The solid state one. I think the iPod Mini still had a hard drive in it. But at any rate, iPod Nano. And then a few years later, I got my first iPhone. But yeah, so the Mac Mini was my gateway drug. Had they announced a new Mac Mini 2 or 3 years ago, I would have definitely bought another one. I have an iMac right now. Old one. It's like 10 years old. Still works. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. If they announce a Mac Mini, I'll think about it, but probably not.
Mac Mini, potentially, and an iPad Mini Pro, probably definitely. Not.
Oh, yeah. So, if they announced it?
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Potentially is a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Of course, they keep saying the Mac Mini's going to get a refresh, so.
Yeah, but they're not saying anything about the iPad Mini, so.
No, yeah. No, it's dying a slow.
I think it's a dead product line for them. Hasn't been updated in 3 years now. So, sadly, that's the case. But on that sad note, we shall end podcast number, what did I say it was? 267. Alrighty, John. Hope you're available next weekend so we can dissect whatever Apple announces this week.
I look forward to it.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.